Fubo says it's in a duel to the death with Spulu. Max and Disney follow Netflix with password sharing curbs and anti-churn tech. Apple spent $700 million on 3 movies. Listen on to learn more.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Stream. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media is with me, of course, there. Hi, Colin. How is everything on your end?
Oh, it's going great, Will, and it sounds like you're a little bit under the weather. It sounds like you've got a cold going on there.
I am. I'm going to try not to sneeze into the microphone here while we record, but yeah, I've had a bad cold the last couple of days, but fortunately, I'm feeling just a little bit better now. And even more fortunately, it was not COVID. I've heard that some of the presenting symptoms of COVID can be look like a bad cold, but fortunately, it's not that. So a little more time and hopefully I'll be back to 100%. So anyway, shall we go ahead and get started? We're going to do an around the horn this week. We have 4 stories that caught our attention, and you're going to get us started with the first one.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a follow-up from our discussion of the sports JV between Disney, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and Fox Corp, which we talked about, I think, 3 weeks ago. And David Gandler, who is the CEO of Fubo, of course, we interviewed him, later last year, about what he's been doing with Fubo. And Fubo has been doing a fabulous job. It's been growing very, very well, turned in another good quarter of growth in Q4. It's now the 4th largest, I think, virtual MVPD. So it is doing extremely well. But Fubo really does consider this sports JV to be now a mortal threat to its business. David Gandler considers this a duel to the death, which is, to say the least, something very unusual for a CEO to say about any situation. And I think there's a lot to what he says. Basically, he sees that Fubo is now at a big disadvantage to this JV. Because there's a couple of reasons why he pointed out. First is that he is being forced to license content from these providers, Disney, WB Discovery, and Fox. He's being forced to license content that he doesn't want in order to get this sports content, which he does, which is going to be in this sports JV. And because he's forced to license this other content, that means his prices are higher. So he is less able to compete with the sports JV when it actually launches. So I think there's a lot to what he says, that he is being put at a disadvantage. And it really is not a fair fight, because he's being forced to charge more when, if they gave him the flexibility to not include some of the channels that he's being forced to compete, he could lower his prices and be more competitive with it. So anyway, this is really, I think, a serious deal for Fubo. If they were not to prevail in this lawsuit that they're bringing, I really do think that the sports JV would impact subscriptions to Fubo. I'm not saying that I think it would be a mortal blow like Mr. Gandler is saying, but I definitely think it would have a tangible impact on Fubo's business.
Oh, I agree, Colin. I think it would certainly have a tangible impact. Fubo has, from day one, been known for being a sports-oriented vMVPD, so they would be most impacted among that group of companies, of services rather, by the JV. And of course, your point is well taken, that this is a longstanding issue in the pay TV industry, that the owners of sports-oriented TV networks have packaged lesser-viewed networks with the sports networks in order for the distributors, the pay TV operators, to be able to get access to the sports networks. This is, a tactic that's as old as time in the industry. And I think David is right that it would put them at a disadvantage, because now you'd have sports fans able to pay a lower price. And, you know, the rumor on the JV price is anywhere between, I think, $35 and $50 a month is what I've read. Certainly far less than what Fubo is charging right now for its service. So if the viewer or subscriber were only interested in sports, they would certainly save some money by switching over. That said, if there are other members of the household who are interested in non-sports content, whether that's, you know, news or entertainment or weather or what have you, then it might still make sense for those households to hang on to their vMVPD service or pay TV service, you know, traditional pay TV service for that matter. So it's, I think it's all still a little bit murky at this point, but I think that he is right to be concerned about this move.
I do too. I two quick points here, Will. First point is, I think it's already impacting Fubo negatively. They look, by any measure, Fubo did great last year. They increased subscribers 12% in 2023. Their average revenue per unit grew by 15% in a really tough advertising market. And revenue increased 28%. And despite all of that good news, the stock has really been impacted by the rumor of this JV. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I think that Fubo has really hit a sweet spot with sports fans. I was looking at some really interesting data from Hub Entertainment Research. So what that Hub data shows is that sports fans really are very, very loyal to their sport. And in fact, 80% of avid sport fans are at least somewhat likely to add a subscription if they need to watch their sports. So when you think about it in this context, those sports fans, many of those avid fans are already Fubo customers, right? So they possibly even changed services to go to Fubo because they knew that they could get the sports. Well, if suddenly those sports show up in a cheaper spot, then yeah, I think it's highly likely that some of those sports fans would leave and go with the cheaper price if they don't lose anything, if they don't lose any other sport that they're interested in. So anyway, I think that's probably enough on that topic. So why don't we move on and talk about our second topic? And this is somebody playing follow suit after Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely. I think password sharing crackdown is going to be the big trend in the industry as we go forward. Warner Brothers Discovery said, their executive J.B. Perrette said this week that they're planning, I think this had been previously announced actually, but was reiterated, and that they're going to be, as we go further into this year and into next year, they're going to be implementing password sharing crackdown. And that is, I think, no surprise whatsoever. Disney has said they're going to do the same with Disney Plus, following Netflix's very successful rollout of the password sharing crackdown, accounted for a good number of their new subscribers last quarter, as they acknowledged they had a very strong Q4. And so I think that it's only fair to assume that every other SVOD service is going to be doing the exact same thing. Now, a question is whether they all do it as elegantly as Netflix did. Of course, they can just follow the Netflix playbook if they choose to, but it's not necessarily the case that they will. Netflix, I think, put a lot of thought into how to execute the password sharing, how to message it to subscribers, how to make it pretty easy for sharing, or for, you know, discounted pricing to continue as an option. So remains to be seen how everyone else is going to do with it. But yeah, it looks like that's going to be coming to Max, and they're also being careful about not boosting expectations too much, because Netflix had been around for many, many years and had accumulated a lot of password shares whereas Max has not been around nearly as long, nor has Disney Plus. So there's probably no other SVOD service that's going to get the same bump out of clamping down on password sharing, but as Netflix did. But if it's executed properly, they should see some bump.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. It will be all in the implementation. I think the keys to Netflix success was one, introducing that low cost ad supported streaming tier, which allowed those people that had been reluctant to sign up or were sharing, which gave them a very low price point entry back into the Netflix fold. I think that was absolutely key. The second was that Netflix has been very selective about how they implemented this. They didn't just sort of go after everybody all at once. What they've done is they've segmented out their user base, and they're going after groups that they see are highly likely to resubscribe or participate. And the third thing they did was that they gave people the option to pay for a second location. But the way they priced it was actually pretty clever. I thought it was kind of annoying because I actually had to cope with somebody that I did have to pay for in a different location. But basically, they made the economics such that it just made sense to have that person subscribe directly themselves. And of course, the fourth thing was the migration tool, so that people that were sharing and had their own profile could migrate their profile, so they didn't lose their favorites and stuff when they moved over. So I think those were the keys to success that really made password sharing, and is making their password sharing, or paid sharing as they have been calling it, such a success. And if Max is able to reproduce that, I think they could do well. I will say that their cheapest price point is $9.99, which is quite a bit higher. Actually, is it $9 or $10? It's around that. That's quite a bit higher than Netflix entry level point, which is just $7. So that could be a weakness right there. But it's, as you say, all in the implementation.
I think it is. And speaking of Netflix, we have another story. You have a story here related to Netflix and to Disney.
I do. And this really came up from a statement that Disney CEO Bob Iger made at the Morgan Stanley Technology, Media and Telecom Conference that was taking place in San Francisco this week. And one of the things he said was he posited that there's a big problem. Direct to consumer services have a real problem with things like churn. He posited the problem was a technical challenge, one that Disney's gold standard competitor Netflix has already conquered. What he said was, we are now in the process of developing all of that technology, and obviously the gold standard there is Netflix. We need to be at their level in terms of technology capability. And boy, is he ever right. Netflix's churn, according to Antenna at the end of 2023, was just 2% a month, compared to Disney's, which is 5.5%. Hulu is 6%. This is very high. That having this many people walking out the door every month is really, really tough. It generates a lot of subscriber reacquisition costs. You're missing out on a whole bunch of subscription revenue by not being able to retain people. So there is a big problem. But I was a little bit skeptical, Will, that it is actually a technical problem. So I took a look, and I remembered something that Jonathan Hurd of Altman Solon said at your conference last week. And he was talking about Netflix, and he did a lot of analysis. And what he basically found was that 60% of viewing hours went to what he called mid-tail content. That is content that's not, you know, the very latest stuff, but it's also not long tail, so it's not very old. So it's quite recent, quite interesting to consumers, to viewers. And that stuff, of which Netflix has about 8,000 titles, he says, is generating a lot of the viewing. And I I absolutely believe that this is true. And if you look at the data from ComScore from last year, ComScore said that Netflix engagement was like 35 hours a month compared to Disney Plus, which has only 12 hours a month. And Disney Plus is very weak in that mid-tail area. Well, the content catalog is not very thick. It really does rely very much on its franchises and more recent content. And actually, it's been removing content. But at the same time, I noted that Hulu, which has great engagement, 34 hours a month, very similar to Netflix's 35, is also great in the mid-tail, but its churn sucks. It's at 6%. So while there clearly is some relationship between having a good mid-tail amount of content available, it's clearly not the only thing that's involved here in keeping people subscribed to Netflix and keeping Netflix's churn so low. And I have a feeling that Iger could be right. It could be that Netflix is just doing a better job connecting people with content that they want to watch. And it may not just be that they have this large catalog. It needs to be connected with great technology that gets people quickly to the content that they watch. And that means that people trust Netflix, and a lot of people make Netflix their default service. That's where they come when they want to watch in the evening, because they know that Netflix is going to connect them quickly with something that they want to watch. So I reached the conclusion that maybe Bob Iger is right here, that Netflix does have some technical advantage, particularly in their discovery and personalization technology.
Well, the two issues seem to be linked, though, right? I mean, you have to definitely have the underlying... As you pointed out, you have to have the underlying content to point out to the viewer in the first place. You could have the best pointing tools in the world, but if there isn't that strong mid-tail base like Netflix has, that 60% of time spent is being viewed watching. You know, you could have Netflix could have the best pointing tools, but still not. If they didn't have that content, they wouldn't be able to move forward.
That's exactly right, Will.
And that's the Disney handicap, right? That's been a big Disney Plus issue.
Remember, one of the things that Disney has said that they're going to be doing is they're coming up with this combined product of Disney Plus and Hulu and putting Hulu content in Disney Plus. And what we do know is that Hulu has pretty good engagement, 34 hours a month versus Netflix's 35. So that kind of fixes the mid-tail problem, but it does not fix that churn problem. And that's what's got me thinking that, yeah, Disney can put the Hulu content in Disney Plus and get better engagement, but it won't fix the churn problem, because maybe there's this technical advantage that Netflix has in leveraging that deep mid-tail catalog and getting the right show in front of the viewer at the right time, so that they trust the service enough to come into it on a daily basis. So that's where I think the technology advantage comes in.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the taking a step back, I think it's part of the advantage that Netflix has in being the pioneer of this space. They have just been at it for so much longer than everybody else. So they've learned along the way all the lessons that were to be learned about how to succeed in the business that their competitors now are just learning for the first time.
That's exactly right, Will. So
it takes time.
It does take time. So let's see, onward and upward, what's our next topic? Yeah.
Well, speaking of a thin catalog, we've talked about Apple TV Plus many times on the podcast, and I thought it might be worth noting an article from Variety this week pointing out that Apple spent $700 million on just three movies, and that is a reminder. They had said that they were going to spend $1 billion. They had allocated $1 billion on movies. This was probably about a year or so ago. So the 700 million went to Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, and Argyle. And it's not exactly clear how much they have earned. The Variety article said 446. But I think their, movie revenue accounting can be a little dicey. And Apple apparently has said that they're satisfied with that. But I was a little bit surprised. Listeners might remember way back when we talked about the billion that Apple was going to spend, that I thought they would deploy it in more of a A24 strategy. And listeners are probably familiar with some of the movies that A24 has produced, like Moonlight and Aftersun and The Whale. These are movies that are not hugely expensive to make, and are very compelling to audiences. They're, I guess, might be considered independent movies by the standard of, today's big budget type releases, the Marvels and the DCs, et cetera. But anyway, I think that for Apple, which certainly can afford the 700 million, there's no issue about that. I think the bigger question is just, are they getting the best bang for their buck in terms of building out Apple TV Plus? And I think picking up on the theme from our last topic, they really need more bulk in their catalog. And so allocating this amount, about three quarters of the movie budget to just three movies does not really accomplish that goal. And I think that's an issue for subscribers because they can pretty quickly go through content that's available and then be looking for more. And if there isn't more to be had, then that opens up the window for churn, for dropping the service and churning out. So, caught my attention and a little bit surprised. How about you?
Yeah, I am too. And I mentioned the churn figures for Netflix. Well, it turns out that churn is pretty darn high at Apple TV Plus. In fact, I think in that data, it's over 8% for Apple TV Plus. So I don't know that spending $1 billion on three movies, particularly when one is not that successful, is a smart thing to do. Another area that they remember that they've been investing in is sport. They did that deal with MLS. And I think that might be working out quite a bit better, at least according to some of this Hub data. I was talking to John Geigengeck this morning from Hub Research, and he told me that they've just done this new sports media report. And they were basically asking, would their subscribers, would you sign up for a streaming service that has exclusive rights to that league? And 43% said that they were very likely, and 38% were somewhat likely, that they were very likely to sign up for this streaming service to get MLS. And of course, when they fielded this study, Apple TV had just finished its first season of MLS. So what this tells me is that the people that did use it were very, very comfortable with that service on Apple TV Plus. And actually, I'd looked at reviews of the various coverages on Apple TV Plus and on broadcast TV. And the reviews I saw said that basically Apple TV Plus, that coverage in the MLS package there was a really, really good, much, much better than the broadcast. So that, in a world where most sports fans still trust cable as the place to watch the sport that they're interested in. So I think, Apple is investing their money, their entertainment money, in interesting ways. I think they're paying $1 billion a year for MLS on Apple TV Plus. At least in that case, it seems to be working out pretty well, Will. But as regards these three movies for $1 billion, I'm not sure that that's quite such a good investment.
Just 700 million, Colin, not the full billion.
Oh, sorry.
What's 300 here and there, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. So there was one other thing we wanted to mention about sports, right?
Well, we're both very excited about the Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight that's going to be on Netflix. I say that with all sarcasm intended. A little bit surprised Netflix would pursue this. Seems a little bit lower brow than I would have expected, but I'm guessing they got a pretty good price on this, and they still feel that there's some durability to Mike Tyson, and Jake Paul has a big social media following, so they went for it, but I don't think this indicates anything about a bigger push into sports by Netflix. How about you?
No, I think it's right in line with where the company has been going. It said it's into sports entertainment as opposed to critical, you know, live sports leagues and stuff like that. This is right in line with that. What they did that golf tournament with the Formula One drivers, and they've done a couple of other things like this, which is sports related entertainment as opposed to sports itself. And this is right in line with that.
Exactly. That seems to be their strategy for now. That could change, but that seems to be their ambitions at this point.
It does indeed. But you know, I think we're just about out of time this week, Will.
I think we are, Colin. So we covered a lot of ground, and good going through all this stuff with you as always.
And you, Will.
And thanks to our listeners for following us this week, and we will be back again next week. We'll see you then.
Inside the Stream is a production of InScreen Media and Video News, all rights reserved.